If you're chasing data down instead of seeing it in one place, you need the Intuit ERP. Intuit Enterprise Suite. All your data in one place with built-in AI for real-time insights. Learn more at intuit.com/ERP.
Some people say it's wrong to be this into a show, but the new shape of my Galaxy Z Fold 8 from Samsung is just right for diving into every social post from the cast. And when I unfold it, I can lose myself in every episode on the perfectly sized screen while I defend my theories in the group chat. Oh, gotta go. Just got an alert about a potential spinoff.
Whatever you're into, the all-new Galaxy Z Fold 8 is the right size to get really into it. Save up to $1,200 with eligible trade-in when you pre-order. Ends 6 while supplies last. See trade-in terms and conditions that apply to Samsung.com.
Joining us now is a man who has spent time in the military, in the Navy, and he has spent time trying to run for Congress as well, and he is still pushing to revive our republic, and that's the name of his book, Reviving Our Republic. He has a website, revivingourrepublic.com. He has a podcast as well as an app that is in development, and I wish him luck because, as we were just talking about, this republic is dead. We beat this dead horse on a regular basis just to point out where it needs to go. But it's important to take a look at this from a systematic point of view. And, of course, thank you for joining us, Mike Biedenbaugh. Thank you. And the book, again, is Reviving Our Republic, 95 Theses for the Future of America. As we said just before this interview started, I asked you, I said, is that a reference to Martin Luther?
Yes, it is, David. Thank you so much for having me on. And yeah, like I told you, if a little monk in a German village was willing to risk being burned at the stake, I'd be willing to risk whatever the parties throw at me trying to put this thing out and try to share the good news so that we can fix this mess we're in.
Well, thank you. I think what they're burning at the stake is the Constitution. They put a stake through its heart and they set the thing on fire. That's what is happening here.
They're using it for kindling.
Yeah, that's right. Where do we start with all this? I mean, it is a target-rich environment, all the things that are wrong with our government. And I like the way you structured the book because you go through, we have to understand how we got here. We get to a point where we're in a tangled forest that is on fire and it's like, instead of continuing down this path, how do we find our way back and kind of trace the breadcrumbs back to where we were? Where would you start and where did you start? You started with partisanship, I believe.
Well, yeah. So let's go back 36,000 foot view of this. I was inspired the structure of Martin Luther's 95 Theses, but the elements of the software, besides the hardware inside it, was based on George Washington's farewell address. I think George Washington was the indispensable man that made this nation possible. And, that's a long story on why I think that is. But when he left office, he gave us a farewell address because he saw, after being in office for two terms, where the Constitution didn't really, where the openings and vulnerabilities of self-government was and how the Constitution didn't have enough guardrails. Mm-hmm. So he mentioned about the warning of false patriotism, of agitated political parties, consolidation of power in political parties, foreign entanglements, and also fiscal responsibility. And those three things right there show how we have totally ignored his instruction manual on how to keep this thing in between the rails. Now, I added the more modern perspective of corporate political collusion, which is what has compromised the ability of people on the ground to have as much effect in our self-government as I think we should, and as most people, I think, understand that we should.
I agree. And if we don't do something about this corporate government collusion, we're going to wind up with a police surveillance state. I mean, that is at the heart of it. It's what we have seen in terms of the censorship for social media and so many other things. But of course, one of the issues that you talk about, and it's one that everybody returns to, term limits. And I thought it was interesting when I ran for Congress 30 years ago, it was right after Newt Gingrich had done his contract with America. He had 10 terms that were there. They enacted all of those except for term limits, if I remember correctly. That was the one that they did not do. I think they did everything else, even the line item veto. But it was Rudy Giuliani who then took them to court over the line item veto and got the Supreme Court to overturn that, surprisingly. But they did not want to have term limits. Once they ran on that, but then once they got in, it's like, no, let's forget about that.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. How do we get that type of thing through? That I think is part of the issue. When we look at this, a big part of it, and that's one of the early things that you talk about, is term limits and the fact that they have this separate retirement system and all these perks that are there. There's every incentive for the kind of government that we have right now, isn't there?
Well, it is. And the thing is, the way people are approaching representation now is as if it's a lifetime career. Mm-hmm. And it was never meant to do that, especially in the House of Representatives.
Yes.
It expected a more professional, connected class in the Senate. But the Senate was never supposed to be elected by the people. It was supposed to represent the state governments.
That's right.
Right. Mm-hmm. And that's been compromised, which is another thing I think we should have to look at. But term limits alone won't fix anything as long as we still have the revolving door from serving to lobbyists and corporate boards, and then being also for corporations and money to funnel back into lawmaking. And so that's why when I talk to people about this, one or two policies won't fix anything.
That's right.
It takes a full revolution of all these different things. And really, it's just taking the traditions we were founded on and elevating them back to show how important they are.
I agree. And, I guess the question is, how do we do that? Because the political power parties have become so incredibly powerful. They have a lock on even who is allowed to run, essentially, and who is allowed to be heard. I don't know what the situation is like there in South Carolina where you ran. You told me just before the interview, you ran in Lindsey Graham's old district.
Yes, I did. And it is the reddest district here. Now, I consider myself a constitutional conservative.
Mm-hmm.
And so I know all the Republican Party groups here, but I know I would not be accepted by them because I don't toe the line of party dogma.
Mm-hmm.
So I knew I had to run as an independent. The person I ran against, which was Donald Trump's second choice to anoint,
mm-hmm.
She was elevated she was elevated through corporate money. She ended up raising $900,000. I didn't have a chance.
Mm-hmm.
And here in South Carolina, it's one of seven states. It was seven states 2 years ago. I assume it's the same, where all you got to do is hit R and you don't have to vote for another thing. You just hit R for Republican or D.
Mm-hmm.
And that makes it really hard for independents to gain a track hold here in any federal election.
What about ballot access in South Carolina? In North Carolina, that was a very difficult thing for us to do. I got involved with a third party. I got involved with the Libertarian Party. And it was this task. We compared it to Sisyphus. Because you have to roll this thing up, and then you did not retain ballot access unless you got a certain percentage of the vote for either governor or president. And the two that would be the hardest to get there. And then at that point, you start all over again. And the threshold was you had to get 10% of the vote for governor or for president in order to remain on the ballot. Otherwise, each time you go through and have to create a new political party. And and they did that, even though we had a candidate who got 4% of the vote. They said, that doesn't count. You got to go back and collect signatures equivalent to 2% of the people who voted. And it's like, how does that make any sense?
You got signatures. You had 4% of the people vote for you. So they signed off on your signature. I was able to get in through a party, the Alliance Party, which was formed by actually my personal doctor, a good friend of mine. He had run for governor again in the primary against Mark Sanford.
Mm-hmm.
And he formed with a leading Democrat in the state, the American Party, trying to create kind of a middle road party that was constitutional. And then they ended up forming with others to form a National Alliance Party that had ballot access in about 10 states back in 2020. Unfortunately, those other organizations went to the wayside, and now there's only two states that have Alliance Party. The one in Minnesota is very liberal. It's kind of a reform progressive Democrat party.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Ours is here in South Carolina, does not have any ideology except systems. What you pledge not to run more than two terms and things like that.
Hmm.
So that's why I felt very comfortable running under the Alliance Party.
And of course, that is the key. You know, the Republican and Democrat parties, They're the ones who pick the candidates. They run their own primaries and that type of thing. They've got their own rules. It's amazing how much power is concentrated at that point. And they become the gatekeepers, really, for these professional politicians, don't they?
Well, they do. And the thing that I have a problem with the primaries is the parties I see as private groups that want to put forth their agenda, their platform with a representative to represent that party in whatever office it is. Mm-hmm. And, you know, but they have the state underwriting their primaries as if it's as important an election as the final election.
That's right.
So what we've done, we've created a culture of voters who think the primary is the first part of the election. Mm-hmm. And it's not. So now we have Republicans and Democrats calling for closing the primaries, meaning you can only be a Republican to vote in a Republican primary. Mm-hmm. And my response, it sounds logical that if you're in a Republican primary, but my response to that is, that's what a convention is.
That's right.
If you know, don't have the state underwriting, don't have our tax dollars going to support your primary if everybody can't vote into it.
That's right.
That's not how it works. So I call on a lot of my Republican friends here to quit calling for a closed primary and just go back to the convention system that they had before.
How do we get past this this blockade, though? I mean, you know, both you and I have run as trying to run outside the two-party system. We hit a brick wall with that. It is so incredibly entrenched, and they have set up a system because they get paid off by so many people. And it's essentially a system where they pay off the media. We've seen this system used by the pharmaceutical companies. They understood how that worked. So they started running commercials. Now they own the different networks because they run so many commercials on them. They're not going to criticize their product. And the same thing is true of the Republicans and the Democrats.
It is. So what it will take is a social upheaval against the chaos that is inevitable to come.
Mm-hmm.
Because we are on the verge of a certain level of social chaos, civic chaos.
Hey, Drew Brees here. As a business owner, I know the importance of having a trusted financial partner. That's where B1 Bank comes in. Whether you're expanding your company, acquiring property, planning a transition, or making one of the biggest financial decisions of your life, B1 Bank stands with you. When you're ready to make that move, let's talk about what you're building. Visit b1bank.com today. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender. B1 Bank, ignite ambition.
Moro Casino, America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends. With thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
That really concerns me. It concerns me for my grandchildren being born here. I'm a big student of South Carolina history, mm-hmm. and I know enough about our history that when the governmental guardrails and social norms break down, people get hurt.
That's
badly.
Right.
I mean, the revolution in America, we've glorified and romanticized the revolution, especially this last 250th anniversary of the Declaration. But in South Carolina, it was a bloody civil war where brothers were hunting down brothers and killing them. It was chaos in the upcountry of South Carolina, a bloody mess. And then you had what happened leading up to, you know, the Civil War and then Reconstruction and then Jim Crow. So we always have a tendency for a certain level of mobism that the checks and balances are supposed to help mitigate. I mean, if you remember, our Constitution was created as a reaction to Shays' Rebellion, a group of people wanting to overthrow the government. And they had to create a more perfect union where the mobs wouldn't take over. Mm-hmm. And what I see happening now is we're at risk of having mobs taken over again.
And
when people see that, I'm hoping they'll look for something to rally around. And my book is just me, no hubris. It's just me going, here's my experience. Here's my life. I think this will work and I'm putting it out there. And I appreciate you giving me time to share it.
Well, and I think that we need to understand, as I pointed out, you know, in your book, you'll say, how did we get here? Well, these are the different steps. This is how this evolved. These are major milestones. So people can see where it began and then where it went wrong gradually. And hopefully if we have that perspective, we can learn something from this failure that this government is doing. I agree with you. I think it's going to get very bad. I think what's going to happen, part of it, I think, is going to be the Federal Reserve, because when you look at the way the federal government has assumed power, it's been through a process of bribery and blackmailing with money that was just created out of thin air, the fiat currency. Once yep. that goes, people have become so dependent upon that. That's why this is going to be much worse than the American Revolution was initially, because not only do we have weapons of destruction that are much worse now at this point, but we also have an interconnection here. In other words, it's going to rip the fabric of society apart in a way that is very different than the American Revolution was. We were not that intertwined with Great Britain. People were pretty much independent on their own. And society wasn't that intertwined either. You didn't have this kind of complicated, just-in-time delivery system. People were pretty much self-sufficient. They could grow their own food. They had a large amount of independence. Now people just go to the grocery store. If the grocery store gets cut off because of a supply problem, we got big problems. And it's going to get really bad, I think.
One bad sun flare or a wartime microburst in the atmosphere, and there's people that will go back to the Stone Age because we don't have connectivity with these anymore.
That's right.
And just the computers in our cars. Mm-hmm. So just to go back a little bit, where all this started, I think, is the slippery slope for great nations, that they always fall into this trap of power and growth. And it's my philosophy that we cannot be a world hegemonic power.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
At the same time of being a nation bounded by liberty of the individual and sovereignty of communities and states in relationship with each other. The type of systems for one is mm-hmm. not the same systems for the other. And we have gone into the world hegemonic power, world currency stuff for so long that, and coupled with our wealth, has led to a consumptive society. People just want to consume. And as long as they consume and get cheap stuff, mm-hmm. they're fine.
Mm-hmm.
That's why it's going to lead to a certain breakdown that hopefully will not lead to secession of states or whatever could come about from this. I mean, I could easily see a trajectory where we'll have the nation could potentially break apart.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I could see mm-hmm. that happening. I hope not.
I think I think the power is too concentrated to be governable. And, you know, and I think when I look at the types of things that you're talking about, I think you realize that as well. We have seen so much concentration of power. One of the things that you talk about, of course, that's your thesis 33, you address the fact that we have so few congressional representatives. What we have done is limit the number of congressmen, when in reality, at the very beginning of the Republican, of course, they immediately abandoned the idea that they would limit the number of constituents, right? Have it 30,000 or 50,000 or whatever. They said, well, never mind. Now we have a fixed number of members of Congress, and yet the number of constituents has grown and grown and grown. And so what you're seeing is a consolidation of power within each individual congressman. And that
That's
is
right.
antithetical to everything the founders wanted. They understood the danger of the concentration of power. We see that in so many different ways, but a lot of people don't see it in the power of an individual congressman. And, you know, now they represent what? I think it was a 500,000 people when I ran. Now it's about 700,000.
750 something thousand.
Yeah, yeah. And that's
what
insane.
It is now.
That's insane. That's too much concentration of constituents for a congressman to actually represent those people. And so a lot of the objections, I was talking about this 30 years ago, a lot of the objections I heard were, well, we can't get everybody into one big building. You know, if we have that, if we got several thousand congressmen, we can't get them all in one building. It's like, who said that's necessary anymore, right?
Yeah. I mean, I tell you, there's so much technological revolution of mm-hmm. communication, of engagement, that I've worried about that too. When I talk about that, you know, how do we reduce this? Can we reduce this down to 100,000 people?
Mm-hmm.
And it will be difficult, but we have to have a goal to figure this out, because I know the way it is now, it is too much detachment of the people from their representative. And it leads the representative to only see their constituents as only those people who either voted for them or has given them the most money or their corporate partners.
That's right.
And we just got to stop it. So if it
yeah,
means
the reality
we have
is,
three,
they don't really represent 30,000 or 750,000 people, do they?
No.
They represent a very small group of people who gave them money. Corporations,
well, that's
AIPAC, and that sort of thing. That's their constituency.
It is. But the thing that concerns me the most on all of this is the culture of representation has changed the terms constituents to mean the people who voted for them and not everybody you represent.
That's right.
You
That's
hear right. people say, well, I have to support my constituents. And they're talking about either the Republicans or Democrats or the base, whoever voted for them. That's not the spirit. So that's the type of educational thing and conversation we have to have to shift this. And I see a lot of these shifts as being generational. Mm-hmm. I think they'll work, but it takes the conversations like this and getting out there and saying there is a way through this, but we have to start taking responsibility and to be vigilant over the freedoms we want to maintain.
I agree. Yeah, it has become so entrenched. And even as we watch these things, some of these things, like one of the ones that you address, of course, is the 17th Amendment, which was changing the Constitution to have a direct election of senators. Well, what's wrong with that if we want to have a representative republic, right? Well, they were there to represent the power of the states. And as you pointed out, a lot of this stuff really hit the pedal when it was the group of people who had fought the Civil War. They very much did not want to have any power in the states. They wanted to consolidate all power into Washington. And so that was part of that design, wasn't it? But it is set there now in essentially concrete in a constitutional amendment. It's going to be very difficult to undo that. We have other issues.
That will be
issues.
One of the hardest.
Yeah.
Well, sorry, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say we have other issues that have just kind of evolved. Like I refer to it as the Pelosi power lever. The fact that she wage control over the House of Representatives. And then once the Republicans got in, they complained about it. Once they got in, they used the same thing. You had John Boehner and others. You had the revolt that came from people like Thomas Massie and Marjorie Taylor Greene and Chip Roy and some others to say, no, we're going to have something that operates more along the lines of a standard parliamentary procedure where we are able to offer amendments from the floor. We can introduce bills without having to go through the control structure at the top. You know, people look at the control structure that the political parties exercise over the ballot. They exercise that kind of political control over the ballot inside of Congress. And Congress doesn't have any real elections. They've got to restore elections and voting to Congress before you really have any meaningful reform. I mean, they're talking about, well, we got to do things to make the elections more honest. Well, make the elections in Congress and the votes in Congress more honest. I mean, there's just so many things that they have done. As you point out, I don't really see any way that you're going to break this logjam unless it's going to be a major catastrophe in this country.
Well, it will be a level of catastrophe that will wake people up, and hopefully will. What I've been doing is sending out my book and trying to get folks to realize, you know, if we can just get 10 or 15 representatives to take this book and take my 95 thesis and go, wow, I want to support this, and create a Federalist Caucus or a new Federalist Caucus or something like that in the House and Senate, they can control the House and Senate with 15 people.
Mm-hmm.
It will be under their control. And that type of fulcrum caucus is the way out of this to try to get the other folks to come alongside. One of the things when we were talking, I wanted to mention one of the things I think is most important, because people talk about Citizens United and all of these decisions that put so much money into corporate hands for our elections. You know, this is another amendment we have to do. We have to differentiate between natural persons, which is what our citizenship is made of, and artificial personas, which are corporations. Because right now, the textualists on the Supreme Court see them as the same because there's no differentiation in the Constitution about it. And we need to differentiate that.
But Mike, Mitt Romney said corporations are people too.
I know. That did not go well. Well, you know, but that's the thing, right? He said that in this thing because that's what the Supreme Court said. But it also shows the misunderstanding of the role of the Supreme Court. They're not the lawmaker. They're the umpire. If they call a strike, you don't sit here and say, we're tired of hearing about strikes. We need to change Supreme Court. What does it take to get a better pitcher? What does it take to set up the rules and to change it? And with that, Citizens United just told me, here's what's decided. Here's how we fix it. And I think if it's communicated that amendments can work, I think we'll have a lot of people rallying around them. And that's what I'm hoping this book would do.
Mm, yeah. Well, it certainly is something people need to understand. Your book is focused around American history, around the American solutions and the problems that came to undo those solutions that people like George Washington and Jefferson gave us at the beginning. We turned our backs on that. And this whole thing is going to blow up. My concern, Mike, is that as we look at this, there is a growing acceptance of socialism. And I think that's being driven by this concentration now of not only political power in Washington, but a concentration of wealth. And this is kind of a low information revolt against that. People don't understand what socialism is about. They don't understand what the American Republic is about. And they are liable to be, moved in that direction. I mean, when we look at what happened to us in 2020, I'm very concerned about the ability of the American public in general to really understand what's going on and to really have a backbone about it.
Well, people that are touting a concept of social welfare and pooling dollars for social benefit is a natural outcome when you have the capital markets pooling all the money at the top, right? Mm-hmm. So in my little town here of Prosperity, South Carolina, you know, my grandfather's generation, all the stores in Prosperity supplied all the goods anybody needed within a hour-long buggy ride,
That's right?
Or cars and everything. But what we've had is a kind of a colonial aspect of large corporations extracting capital out of small towns and pooling it into larger cities and creating franchises. So when I was growing up, people that owned their own stores, their grandchildren now are managers of chains.
That's right.
You know, and
they've broken the power of the mom and pop, and they've broken the ability to have, that's one of the strengths of America and even of England that Napoleon criticize them for being a nation of shopkeepers. Well, we don't have that problem anymore, do we? But that was people, you had an opportunity. If you worked hard, you had a ladder that was going to take you up. And you also had that kind of flexibility that was built into the system. Now they have knocked down those ladders and people don't have that opportunity. We had major, major destruction of that during 2020. You had the small guys were told you shut down. The big guys were told you can open up. And I know how that looks because I've had a small business as well. I've had a situation where they allowed Walmart to stay open, but they shut us down. And, that really hit a raw nerve with me when it happened to me, and it hit a raw nerve when it happened again in 2020. But that is exactly what we're seeing. But it's even worse than that. In a sense, I look at this as this kind of plantation system that we have now.
Hey, Drew Brees here. As a business owner, I know the importance of having a trusted financial partner. That's where B1 Bank comes in. Whether you're expanding your company, acquiring property, planning a transition, or making one of the biggest financial decisions of your life, B1 Bank stands with you. When you're ready to make that move, let's talk about what you're building. Visit b1bank.com today. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender. B1 Bank, ignite ambition.
10 hours on my feet, traffic, noise, everybody needing something from me. My head is spinning. I just need the world to stop for 1 second. But then I get home, shoes off, phone out, and I open Modo Casino. Hundreds of slots, classic table games. It's my instant reset. The variety I want in the quiet I need.
Modo Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Modo.us for more details. Download the Modo Casino app today. Must be 21 plus.
Modo Casino. America's social casino.
you know, in the original Constitution, unfortunately, they had slaves as only having a portion of being represented in government for the census. They only represented as a portion of the population. I think that's where we are right now. I think they see us as slaves and serfs. We don't really, they might count us, but we don't really count. Not in the ways that they're looking at, as you pointed out before. They're simply looking at their donors that are there. And those are the people, the corporations that are the superpowers, and they're the essentially the overseers or the owners of the various plantations that these people are going to be managing for them. They have not only have they elevated the corporations to the level of equal to persons, but they've made them superior to people. And you know, when you look at it, the theory of American government and the Declaration of Independence is that we have rights because we're created by God. Well, the corporations are created by government. And yet, over and over again, we see, and this is even coming from the libertarian side, we see people saying, well, the corporations can censor you if they want. And I looked at it and I said, well, okay, if they can take away my liberty, if that suits them, then can they take away my life as well? Are they going to be allowed to murder me without the government stepping in and protecting my life if the government's not going to protect my liberty?
That's right. Yeah. I mean, when I was, I had my own business, promotional merchandise and promotions, and I moved from New York back home to Prosperity, and people, you know, they saw me as a business asset and they wanted me to be on the Chamber of Commerce and on the Economic Development Board. Well, all they had been doing is touting to get big corporations to come to the exit ramp on the freeway near Newberry, South Carolina. And that's what
right.
they were looking for.
That's right.
And I told them, I said, if you bring me on there, no, I will push for, instead of aiming for one big company that hires 500 people, I'd rather have 100 citizens that want to hire 5 people. Because that's the type of sustainable economic development that makes a community healthy. And needless to say, they didn't invite me on the board because, and it wasn't malicious. It's just the cultural outlook of big shovel moments, big companies hiring a lot of people. And it's a sad state of affairs that we can't see the brilliance of just mom and pop shops. But I will say there's a lot of hope in the Gen Zs and the 20-year-olds that are out there now have a very entrepreneurial spirit in a lot of these small towns. I see them starting things and there's opportunity there to tap into that. And I hope we can, but then we have to go into some antitrust things to limit the power of what corporations can do. We have to come to terms with that.
Well, you know, when you're talking about that and the mindset that, well, we want to have these big corporations come in because they're going to create all these jobs and so forth, even if they don't, right? Because we see more often that it's small businesses that create more jobs than big business does. And yet we just saw Donald Trump come out with the data centers talking about, you need to have these things in. If you bring these things into your community, you're going to make a lot of money. It's that same dynamic, that same mindset. And of course, the data centers and the Flock network and all of these surveillance systems that are out there and what I call the police state military industrial complex, when you look at all of that, that really is based on that kind of idea that big corporations really ought to rule us and that is really where the prosperity is going to come. It's going to come from government grants coming out of Washington. Do you address that in your book?
Yes, I do. So one of the big things that I saw that really poisoned that corrupted the system of spending, why we have so much debt, is because we have an automatic funnel of money leaving people's pocketbooks before they even see it in their pocketbook, intervening between the employer and their pocketbook, grabbing out tax money. And that automatic funnel of money has created an addictive society of thinking we always have this money coming in. We can just go in to spend and spend and spend. And you have a population that likes to see money coming back home. But back before, so before the federal income tax was put into place, the tax burden for the states was here. The feds were here. Now it's done this. So what is that? What is that created? That's created a population in the states that go to their representatives who gets elected more and more because we can bring money back down here.
That's right.
Right.
That's right.
And so the states now become subservient to the federal money machine.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why elected representatives constantly get reelected. When I ran, and I'm sure you had this happen too, when I ran, every mayor, every town I went into where I met the mayor, the first thing they asked me is, so how do we know you're going to be able to bring back more money than the incumbent? I mean, and it's a legitimate question because the towns don't have the money to redo their town square anymore. It's relied on a federal grant.
Well, and the reality is that the government doesn't have the money either. You know, there's 40 trillion reasons why the taxes aren't paying for this government, you know, and we see that all the time. So it is really kind of a bluff. We have an empire and the emperor has no clothes because he's...
But the problem is the market can't feed back on that mm-hmm. because people on the ground don't see it. The towns hire a grant writer and the grant writer brings in, we just got a $750,000 grant to repave our square mm-hmm. and wow. And so it's kicking the can down the road. The mm-hmm. fact that we are in the same amount of debt to GDP as we were after World War II, mm-hmm. when we were the only industrial base left to drive our way out of it. We have to come to terms with this because this is a serious thing. And one of the things I mentioned in the book is looking at a way to sunset the federal income tax, but not before there's a specific plan to pay down this debt. Mm-hmm. We have to take responsibility for that. And every corporation, Apple, all these companies that have made billions of dollars in a safe environment, a regulated environment like they've had, they need to pay some money to try to help get this debt down because they have benefited greatly from the society that our tax dollars have paid for.
I agree. Yeah, they're going to hit a position here where they're not going to be able to service the debt. What I think is likely to happen, and I've talked about this, I'll get your take on this. I think what's likely to happen, and it was several cabinet members in the Trump administration when they began saying, yeah, we've got all these natural resources out there. I think they're just going to basically loot the country and sell this stuff off to cover the debt. There's no way that they're going to be able to get it out of the individuals because we all have a tremendous amount of personal debt as it is.
Yeah, you're right. And that is one way they're going to do it. I am concerned from several elements. I listen to a lot of folks, especially in the oil industry, that the current administration has no clue of the economics of the oil industry or the gas industry.
Or any other economics.
Or any other. They don't understand it. My big concern is due to the erratic behavior of this government over the past 10 years
mm-hmm.
and the mistrust of other actors in the world, I can see us shifting from the dollar being the global currency.
Mm-hmm.
And if that happens,
mm-hmm.
the majority of this nation could turn into a third world nation because we're such a debtor nation. Our debt is only fundable if we're the world currency.
Mm-hmm.
If we cease being the world currency, the euro takes over, the Chinese currency takes over in the East.
Mm-hmm.
We're in a world of hurt, and these guys don't understand that, I'm afraid.
Well, I agree, and you already see central banks around the world abandoning the dollar and the bonds, the treasury bonds and that type of thing, going for something that is more solid, which is gold. I think that'll become the de facto standard, whether there's somebody's going to stand up and say, well, that's it. I don't think we're going to have another Bretton Woods where you have some kind of a declaration like that. I think it'll gradually evolve, and it is evolving, and it has been evolving over the last several years. I think it was really kicked off by the sanctions that Biden did. You know, they have these tools, these weapons, and sometimes they use them to such a degree that it blows back on them. And I think that was particularly the case with Biden's sanctions. That began a mass exodus away from the dollar. Already people are looking at this and saying, how do they have all this power that they can use the fiat dollar and they don't have any way to pay this off? How did they get that privilege? And then once they started weaponizing it, people said, all right, that's it. We're going to go to a different type of system. What that's going to be is not really clear yet. I think gold will be a big part of it and silver, but it is going to happen.
Bitcoin thing. I don't understand Bitcoin, and I'd love your take on that, but I don't understand how that works.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of, I'm really concerned what that could mean for
Well, I think
overindulgence in that.
My position on that is that I think that it had at the very beginning, certainly the people who were using it, I don't know who created it. That's another question about it. Was that created as a way to move the Overton window towards a digital currency? Because a digital currency is going to be the absolute way to control everything that we do. And we are seeing not only the central bank digital currencies, but we're also seeing talk about a stable coin. And I think those two things are really going to be a way. They both have the same functions where they can deny, they can immediately confiscate and lock your account remotely if they don't like you or what you do. And so they both have that ability, which is so incredibly dangerous. And so I think that there was perhaps something, some hidden hand behind that, moving it towards that. But again, I'm very leery of anything that is digital like that. And I don't want to put all of, and it's not private. That's the other thing too. I think there's this misconception from people because they talk about cryptocurrencies. The cryptography is not there to protect your identity. As a matter of fact, the Bitcoin ledger is far more visible than anything that's in the current banking system. I've had stories where there was a guy who was a billionaire and all of a sudden he had $900,000 taken out of his account. It was a large transaction. I think it was 900,000. I think it was just below a million. Anyway, this one guy who was looking at what they call whales, right? The large transactions, and this stuck out. And he traced it down, and he was able to connect this particular guy who's just observing it from the outside, was able to contact this guy and say, why did you do this? Or why? And the guy didn't know it. He'd been scammed, and they'd stolen it out of his account. But this guy could see who he was and see that. Now, you never had that with the banking system. So there's a level of visibility there that even individuals who are not part of the government can see that. What can the government see from all this? And I've already had my restrictions put on me financially as well as speech. So I am very concerned about it. It's not a theory. It is a conspiracy, but it is not a theory that they can shut you down in terms of your speech, your reach, and even your finances. They can shut those types of things down. We've seen people punished and debanked. I was debanked by PayPal. And so, you know, you can have these corporations that are doing the bidding of government. And I think that is one of the key structures that is there. Not only do they treat them as a person, not only do they treat them as an elevated elite person, but they also have given them the ability to do to us whatever they wish, that we would not allow that to be done by another person. I can't, if somebody goes in and steals my bank account, I can theoretically get the government to do something about it, but not if it's a corporation and they've got a political agenda, they can do whatever they want to you.
Hey, Drew Brees here. As a business owner, I know the importance of having a trusted financial partner. That's where B1 Bank comes in. Whether you're expanding your company, acquiring property, planning a transition, or making one of the biggest financial decisions of your life, B1 Bank stands with you. When you're ready to make that move, let's talk about what you're building. Visit b1bank.com today. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender. B1 Bank, ignite ambition.
My fellow Americans, this July, we're celebrating America's birthday at Moto Casino by giving away $1,776,000 in prize. And one lucky winner is going to take home $1,000,000 SC. Happy 250th birthday, America. You're welcome. Download Moto Casino today.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Well, that's the thing that you know, I see Donald Trump as a gift because he is showing us all the flaws in the system. It's like the cancerous tumor is shown up in the body.
Yeah.
And now we know what we need to do to repair it. Mm-hmm. And I think there's enough people in this country that can sit there and say, whether you voted for him or not, or whatever you believe, everybody, the most part, everybody knows it's broken. The biggest mm-hmm. problem we have is people assuming it's only broken because the other guys are doing it.
That's right.
And that's one of the biggest hindrances to getting a collective way. And that's why I think the only way for us to get through this right now, and I'm even hesitant at even saying this, is another third party that can wedge in the gap in mm-hmm. between the two polarized other parties to give an option and to get the conversation and shaking it up a little bit, because we should be a multi-party system.
I agree.
You know,
that gets back to how the vote is counted. You know, do you really think as long as we got a first past the post, winner take all system,
never will.
What type of thing do you see happening? Is it going to be some kind of proportional voting or ranked system?
Ranked choice voting. Mm-hmm. I think there's some really cool creative ways, and there's so many pundits out there that have something against one or the other.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know,
the Republicans really hate that ranked voting thing.
Well, because they know what it means.
Exactly.
They know exactly what it means. I have my representative here that's my local representative in the South Carolina State House, and he just despises the concept of it, but it's the concept of it. I told him, I said, because he had a certain person he wanted to win in the primary for Senate.
Mm-hmm.
And for the House, there was a House member they were running for. And I told him, if you had ranked choice voting, your person would have won,
mm-hmm.
because he would have been the second choice of the vast majority of all of them.
Mm-hmm.
And he would have been able to come up and elevate himself in there. People should have multiple choices. We should also have at-large districts to where, because that's how the representation used to work. When the mm-hmm. nation was first founded, it was assumed South Carolina had, I'm just making this up, five people. Everybody in the state would vote for five people, mm-hmm. and it would be general for all the state. Now, I think we're too big to do that now, but there's ways to make it to where everybody's perception is reflected, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. This whole thing of red and blue states nauseates me because nobody is solid red. South Carolina is shown as the reddest state, but it's really 60-40.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And when you mix red 60 and blue 40, you get purple. It's as purple as you know, any other thing. So we're a big mix that we have to have those people represented.
I agree. And, you know, it was JFK that said we make peaceful change and possibly make violent revolution inevitable, I think is the quote that he had. But that whether or not I quoted him correctly, that is the reality. And we have this calcified system of corruption that is really going to make things difficult. And I think the role of Donald Trump has been designed to be an accelerator, and he certainly has accelerated things. And
yes,
unfortunately, he has set, I call him precedent Trump, because he has set a lot of very bad precedents.
I'm going to borrow that. Thank you.
That. He set all these bad precedents, and we talk about it, and it's like, well, what's going to happen when the Democrats are going to get in? Oh, they're never going to get in. We're going to control the government forever. Many of the Republican supporters of Trump will say that. You have to look at this from a broader perspective and understand that if you put something in here right now, you may think that it's a win. You may think that you're owning the libs, but you may be setting up a structure here that is going to be used to as a fight against you, and it's going to be a horrific situation. So that always needs to be in the back of people's minds. And I really do think that I'm a big proponent of Strauss and Howe's fourth turning. I don't know if you're familiar with that or not.
No.
But they're the guys who came up with the label of millennial. You know, where do we come up with this kind of stuff and the generation X, Y, and Z and stuff like that? They looked at American and British history and went back. First, they did one called Generations, and then they did the fourth turning, and they looked at American and British history going back 500 years because they were synchronized. And they saw that about once every four generations, there would be a major change. And they looked at these different generations throughout this long period of time. They said, well, right after there's a major change, the people who went through that, usually it's a war and things like that. The people who went through it, they have a very different perspective, and their kids react to that differently. And then the kids, you know, that third generation that's there, they also come up under different circumstances, but there was a certain commonality to that that kept repeating. And so our fourth turnings, we had the American Revolution was one, then we had the Civil War, then we had World War II and the Great Depression. As they pointed out, all of these changes always have a major economic component to them, and usually it involves a war. And so they said in the early 1990s, they said somewhere around the mid-2000s, there'll be a great economic disruption, and that'll kick off the fourth turning. And it'll probably conclude sometime around 2029. And you notice that these people who always talk about millennials, they never talk about 2030, except when they're talking about their dreams of having sustainable development goals out of the UN. You know, 2030 is really big with smart cities and all these other things. And so I think we're right up against that. I think they realize that there is a certain rhythm to history and to different generations, and they're going to exploit that. And I think that's part of what this acceleration is really about.
Oh, and that you hit the nail on the head. I haven't used those terms, like you said, from those theorists, but I see that. I see mm-hmm. that in history, the cycling, the founders, and you see it in people who own companies, right? The founder of a company, his children do a pretty good job. The grandchildren are the ones that have to sell off assets to keep up their lifestyle.
Mm-hmm.
And so we see that happening in America. And with the differences in how people are educated, the mm-hmm. lack of our education system and extracting out the sense of history and civic education.
Hey, Drew Brees here. As a business owner, I know the importance of having a trusted financial partner. That's where B1 Bank comes in. Whether you're expanding your company, acquiring property, planning a transition, or making one of the biggest financial decisions of your life, B1 Bank stands with you. When you're ready to make that move, let's talk about what you're building. Visit b1bank.com today. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender. B1 Bank, ignite ambition.
Moro Casino, America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends. With thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
I see that every day now when I discuss things and I talk to people that come instinctively to me when I talk about the Supreme Court and how it works. It's like speaking Spanish to these people because they have no they have no foundational understanding of how our government is even supposed to work. And so that's the reckoning we have to have. And what I promised my brand new little grandson, he didn't understand me. He was born a month ago. But I looked in that little child's face and I said, I will not sit down with you when you're 20 years old and say I did nothing. Because when he's 20 years old, he's going to see things that are going to ask me, why didn't you people stop this or whatever it is?
I agree.
And what I'm going to say, here's what I did. And here's what I tried.
Good for you.
And
it's not just the book Reviving Our Republic, but it's also the website revivingourrepublic.com. Your podcast, same name with that. And tell us a little bit about the app that you're working on.
Well, I'm really, and this is the first time I've talked about it publicly. We've created an app, and we should be launching within the next month, especially once Apple approves the app for the platform. But this is a method in which somebody could go in and plug in a executive order, a plug in a politician's platform, or a law, and it will rate it on constitutionality, not whether it's left, conservative, liberal, whatever. All those mm-hmm. are made up mm-hmm. words that are corrupted anyway now. But whether it's constitutional, and we have filled into the algorithm every major Supreme Court case with all the challenges and everything back in, embedded into this app, as well as the Federalist Papers and Washington's Farewell Address. So what I hope it to do is if you plug this stuff in, it'll give a rating score. Mm-hmm. And you can also take platforms of politicians. And I think what will surprise most people is, you know, there'll be Democrats running and there'll be Republicans running, and you take their platforms, you're going to see more constitutionality on things because people are so stuck in the sphere of whether they're conservative or liberal mm-hmm. versus mm-hmm. what's really constitutional.
Yeah.
Because that's the ultimate conservatism is the rule of law. And also it'll give a chance for people, politicians who are running to have a page on this site. And they can take the test on the Reviving Our Republic score. And if they, I have 40 policy points. And if they pick 30 policy points that they agree with, they'll have 100 ROR score. So it'll be a way for people to judge what they see, how it actually applies to the Constitution. And there's not another app like there like it. We're really proud of it. So we're going to launch that. And if you buy a annual subscription, the normal subscription, it's a lot of free stuff. It's a mm-hmm. top, it's a free element to it that you have limited access. But if you get a subscription, it's only $4 a month. If you get an annual, you'll get the whole book downloaded, the book and the audio book. So we're really excited about that and pushing it. And I'm hoping for a national tour. We're going to go around and try to share that. So
that's great. That's great. Yeah, yeah. I'm all for anything that we can have that gives us a little bit of insight into what these politicians are doing. Many of them refuse to answer the questionnaires that are out there as for obvious reasons. That ought to be an immediately fail. You know, you just refuse to participate. You're not going to participate in the constitutional governance of things either. Right.
Right. Well, you have things out there like the Heritage Foundation has, you know, the conservative score, but it's all ideological talking points. You know, they think conservatism is believing we should go and bomb any country we want.
Yeah.
They actually think that's being conservative, and they don't understand that's the most liberal thing that has come out of this national trajectory is to think we can just drop bombs anywhere we want and think that's what makes America great.
Yeah, I agree.
It's the most dangerous thing that we've gotten into.
I agree. When we look at it, you know, when Trump was joking, oh, I'm just joking, I'm just going to be a dictator. But actually, he turned into one when you look at what he did with tariffs. And I call them tariff tantrums. You know, he wakes up, he doesn't like this leader because he said something at a meeting somewhere. So now he's going to throw the tariffs at that country. There's nothing tactical or strategic about it. There's nothing that makes any economic sense about it. It is simply about him throwing something at people that he doesn't like. And that's one of the reasons why we don't want to have one person making that type of decision. And then he doubles down on it and he does the war basically just on his own personal preferences without any oversight, without having any declaration or debate about any of this stuff. It's just unilateral decisions, and he's got a political party that rubber stamps everything that he does. It's truly
as
amazing.
As long as he can platform the demonization of who he is opposing, whether it be, you know, those crazies in Canada or anti-American people in Canada or, you know, the evil Muslims in Iran, as long as he can platform that enemy, he's getting support for it. And it's probably the most dangerous thing. What we've done in Iran is probably one of the most strategic miscalculations this nation has ever done.
Oh, I absolutely agree. Absolutely agree. Yes.
It's horrible. I was in Russia in 1990, and I saw firsthand eating with Russians while Gorbachev was still in power. And I was there all summer living with people in their homes from Leningrad all the way down to Yalta. And I saw in the eyes and ears and hugs of these people who embraced me the positive outcome of detente and reaching out as friends and not bombing Moscow to get what we wanted.
That's right.
And we've missed that opportunity with Iran. We had that opportunity. We have set back. We have so empowered the Revolutionary Guard now. They're going to be entrenched there for another two generations.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. You know, they talk about, 47 years, this and that. And, of course, that's not where our history began, right? Our history began by overthrowing their government with a coup and putting in the Shah of Iran. And so, you know, it that's really the true history. And they were figuring out that, hey, we don't like these Ayatollahs. We want to have something different. Then we come in and start bombing the civilian population. They run to the Ayatollahs for help. And so they have solidified that regime that they claim that was one of their objectives. And then when you look at the nuclear stuff, what they're doing is we're seeing now with Saudi Arabia nuclear proliferation, because all the Arab countries understand that they need to have nuclear weapons in order to be left alone. And so everybody's going to be trying to get it, not just Iran. And, of course, Iran is going to be doubling down on their efforts to get nuclear weapons. But we're going to help Saudi Arabia to get nuclear weapons. And who knows where this all ends?
Well, the thing is, Iran wanted a nuclear weapon for one reason. This whole myth that they were going to start throwing nuclear weapons at people is just the stupidest, most ill-informed concept. They wanted nuclear weapons so they wouldn't be bombed, so they wouldn't be attacked. And this has given them the reason to double down on it. So what just happened in the past few days? Iran bombed the largest Saudi oil refinery. I mean, they have destroyed this thing, and it will affect markets huge. But why did they do that? So who is Iran's main enemy in the region? It's Saudi Arabia. What does our president do? Tell Saudi Arabia you can have a weapon.
Yeah, I know. It's
and all of a sudden
insane.
Iran can't? It's amateur hour with these guys.
Yeah, you look at this and it's almost like, is this stupidity or is it deliberate? You know, when you look at what is happening, certainly this, when we talk about a fourth turning, The entire world now is synchronized because of communications and all the rest of the stuff. It's not just America and Great Britain. And so we're all on this same cycle. And I think that it's necessary for them to have a major global economic crisis and a major global war in order for them to institute the next step of consolidation, and that is a global consolidation of governance. I think this is all by design, quite frankly.
Well, it is. I don't think it has to work. I mm-hmm. look at these people doing this the same way I looked at Khrushchev banging his shoe on the podium. We will bury, you know. It's like, who cares what he said? I mean, you know, history showed what really happened. Mm-hmm. And you know, as long as we empower good people with loving intention that has faith in their fellow citizens, which I think we have a lot more of them out there than is shown in polls.
Mm-hmm.
We can get through this, mm-hmm. but, you know, we're going to go through some hard times, especially with what's going on. The slippery slope of what's happening in the Middle East now is the most worrisome, because I've asked people, ask me, what do you think is going to be next? I honestly have no idea, but I don't think it's going to be good.
I agree. Well, Mike, thank you so much. Mike Biedenbaugh. And again, Reviving Our Republic, the app, the website, and the book. You find all those things out there. And I think it's very important. I really do appreciate what you're doing. All we can do at this point in time, you know, we do what we can. There's no way that we're going to be able to get a voice in terms of elections and things like that. But what we can do is we can point to what the system should be. That's why I talk about the Constitution. Certainly the Constitution is dead, but it is a wonderful plan and a blueprint. Yes, it needs to have some more guardrails in it, as you pointed out at the very beginning, and George Washington understood that, and the founders understood that. It's a human document. It's never going to be perfect, and it's never going to be self-actuating. We're going to have people who understand the importance of keeping individual liberty and freedom, who are going to stand in its defense. And so that's what you're trying to do, and I really do appreciate that. It looks like a great educational resource, and I would highly recommend it. I haven't read through the entire book, but I got pretty far through it to know that we're on the same page. So thank you so much. Appreciate that, Mike.
Well, David, thank you for allowing me on your platform and sharing this with everybody. I really appreciate it. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Good luck, and good luck with the app. We certainly need your help. Thank you.
You got it. Take care. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Common Man. They created Common Core to dumb down our children. They created Common Pass to track and control us. Their Commons Project to make sure the commoners own nothing. And the communist future. They see the common man as simple, unsophisticated, ordinary. But each of us has worth and dignity created in the image of God. That is what we have in common. That is what they want to take away. Their most powerful weapons are isolation, deception, intimidation. They desire to know everything about us while they hide everything from us. It's time to turn that around and expose what they want to hide. Please share the information and links you'll find at thedavidknightshow.com. Thank you for listening. Thank you for sharing. If you can't support us financially, please keep us in your prayers. TheDavidKnightShow.com.
Before you sign off, you tuned in for ways to help teams move faster, make sharper decisions, and turn scattered contexts into work they can use. ChatGPT for Business can help. ChatGPT for Business gives teams a shared workspace with admin controls, permissions, and access to work and codecs in ChatGPT. This means your business can move from question to answer and code to rollout quicker. Join over 10 million business and enterprise users worldwide already using ChatGPT for work. Download the ChatGPT desktop app or contact sales to learn more.
Babe, did you see that Moto Casino is giving a $1,776,000 worth of prizes?
That's why they're called America's Social Casino, celebrating the birth of America bigger than anyone else.
You can win incredible experiences at NASCAR and F1 races and a grand prize of 1 million sweeps coins.
So what are you waiting for? Spin now on Moto Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino.